RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the February 5th, 2020 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Foyt, and this week's episode of the podcast is powered by Roman. And later on in the show, we're going to tell you about how you can get a free online visit and free two-day shipping from Roman. Of course, that's coming up later on in the show. Of course, now coming up here on this week's edition of the show, we're going to get you ready for Saturday's UFC 247. Also, going to talk about Rafael Lovato Jr.'s appearance on the Joe Rogan podcast. And, you know, is there a fighting future for, I guess we still call him the Bellator middleweight champion. Also, we're going to talk about DAZN and are they becoming celebrity boxing? UFC 246, the amount of subscribers that were added to ESPN Plus, which is a very significant number. Plus, got a question from a listener about next year's Super Bowl and you know, what could Bellator potentially do in Tampa if that is something they wanted to go down that road. But Daniel, it is fight week for the UFC pay-per-view on Saturday, and obviously all the attention is going to be on the main event and co-main event, with both those fights being title fights. But we want to start off by, you know, talking about the rest of the fight card, the fights that interest me the most, us the most. And to me, there's two fights that to me really stick out, you know, and that's Mirsad Bektik versus Dan Ige, and Miles Johns versus Mario Bautista. I would also, you know, throw in there Austin Lingo versus Yusuf Zalal. But I think when you're thinking about those fights on the card that you should pay attention to, those to me are the three other fights that really stick out to me.
Wait a second, Jason, are you telling me that you cannot wait to watch a fight that could potentially crown a contender in the heavyweight bout between Wada Adams and Justin Toffa? Are you telling me that doesn't get you all excited? How does that not make your list? Yeah, no. You got a guy coming off a loss to Greg Hardy, and he's on your main card. You got an issue, but there are other fights to get intrigued about other than the title fights. I like the ones you laid down. I mean, let's kind of look at those. All right, Miles Johns and Mario Bautista, that's a really nice bantamweight scrap between Guy and Johns, contender series guy, and a really well-rounded fighter going up against another well-rounded guy. Great grappler, very aggressive striker in Mario Bautista. So that fight in particular is good. The Bektik-Dan Ige fight is definitely the best non-title fight on the main card. Bektik coming off of a loss, coming up against a guy who has put together a nice run, and this is an impeccable test for Dan Ige. So that's a fight that really matters in the featherweight division. You mentioned, I believe, in the opener on the early prelims as well. And Austin Lingo is the name for me to watch, the undefeated guy, come in to that fight. In addition to the fights you mentioned, I will say there are two other non-title fights. And again, this whole card in totality, Jason, I would say is incredibly weak outside of the title fights and really outside of the main event. But number one, I'm intrigued to watch Andrea Lee fight coming off of her loss there. She's a fighter to me who's incredibly marketable in the women's flyweight division. She has a tough test in Lauren Murphy. And I think if she gets a victory, that's a positive sign for the UFC's women's flyweight division, because I feel as though Andrea Lee is someone they can get behind and get people to care about. But at the end of the day, buddy, I don't care who he's taking on. Anytime Derek Lewis is on a fight card, that's appointment viewing television. I want that guy to get a win so we can have the stick in front of him and he can talk some nonsense in the post-fight interview. You know, the highlight of a Derek Lewis fight is often the post-fight interview, and that's saying something because his fights tend to be exciting. So his contest against Ilir Latifi, though it is a fight featuring guys who are definitely looking to get a big victory, kind of don't necessarily have all the momentum in the world. Because Derek Lewis is going to be in that cage, I'm excited about Lewis Latifi, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, you know, when it was announced that Latifi was moving up the heavyweight, that's going to be interesting to see the difference in size between those two men on Friday, you know, when they had their stare down at the official weigh-ins, just because, I mean, you know, Derek Lewis is a guy who cuts to get to 265, and Ilir Latifi, you know, even if he put on some weight, maybe he's 230, 235. So that, to me, that's going to be a pretty big difference there. You know, they go back on the Mirsad Bektik. You know, this there was a time where, I mean, we were thinking Mirsad Bektik was, you know, one of these guys that, you know, who knows, in a couple of years, maybe he could be a champion. And one of the crazy, you know, stats with Mirsad Bektik is this is a fighter who has only fought, the most he's fought in one calendar year is two times. You know, in 2014, he fought twice, Chaz Skelly and Paul Redmond. Then he had one fight in 2015, one fight in 2016, one fight in 2017, two fights in 2018, and only one fight in 2019. I mean, of course, you know, 2-2 in his last four fights. I think we all kind of remember that Darren Elkins fight, a fight that, you know, he was well on his way to winning, and then gets knocked out, you know, 3 minute mark in the final round. You know, he's a guy that we were so high on a couple of years ago. And I like Dan Ige in this spot. I think it's a nice spot for Dan Ige. You know, has looked you know, great, you know, in the UFC after losing his UFC debut to Julio Arce. You know, he's put together, you know, four wins in a row, but you know, to me, that's the matchup on the pay-per-view that really intrigues me. You mentioned, yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I think that fight's really compelling, and really what it comes down to, in my opinion, I think we'll see a stand-up affair for portions, and that's probably where Ige may have the best advantage. But I do think this contest between Ige and Bektik is really going to tell us who has the better wrestling. Because for Mirsad, I think his strongest point of his game is when he's on top of you with his ground strikes, his ground and pound. And if Ige is able to defend his takedowns, I think this is a fight for Ige to win. And this would be the biggest win of his career. So Mirsad Bektik would be my pick in that fight. But I do think, obviously, the big point of contention on determining who wins this fight is what Ige does with the takedown game of Mirsad Bektik.
Yeah, that's a fight that sticks out to me. You know, you mentioned about Juan Adams and Justin Taffa. You know, Juan Adams, a character. Anytime you get a chance to talk to this guy, you know, and obviously after he'd won on the Contender Series, you know, a lot of people looked at him and said, hey, you know, UFC can develop this guy. And, you know, he got his win in his official UFC debut against Chris De La Rocha, but you know, had that loss against Arham Bular, which was not a fun fight to watch. And then, of course, you mentioned about losing to Greg Hardy in 45 seconds. And of course, Justin Taffa on the other side, you know, he was brought in last year to, you know, for the fight card in Australia, ends up losing to Jorgen De Castro. I mean, this is, you know, this is the lower end of the UFC heavyweight division. I'd be surprised if this fight makes it out of the first round. I think it'll be, you know, will Juan Adams use his wrestling in this one? You know, will that be something that he engages with initially? We typically have not seen that. He does have a wrestling background. Of course, Justin Taffa, we know about the striking aspect. You know, Juan Adams does have a significant reach advantage in the fight of 6 inches. So how well can he use that? You know, that's a fight that, you know, to me, you know, I think that, you know, when you look at how the UFC put this card together, I think that it's very clear. You put two heavyweight fights on there because you're thinking that both those heavyweight fights, you know, have a good potential of ending, you know, in the opening round. But, you know, when you look at that pay-per-view, obviously it is about the title fights, and particularly with John Jones, you know, when, you know, obviously after Jones' last title defense against Thiago Santos, I mean, look, that was a tough fight for John. That was not a walk in the park. And obviously there were some people and judges that thought that Thiago Santos did enough to win that fight. But, you know, after Dom Reyes' win against Chris Weidman, this was the fight that I wanted to see. You know, even though, you know, I mean, look, John's always going to have a reach advantage in the fight. This time he has a 7-inch reach advantage over Dom Reyes, but stylistically, I'm interested to see what can Dom Reyes do. Can Dom Reyes incorporate some of the things that, you know, Cormier has done that had success against Jones, how Thiago Santos has success, Alexander Gustafsson back in the day. Like, to me, it's an interesting matchup. Do I think Dom Reyes is going to win this fight? No, I don't. I think the only way Dom Reyes wins this fight is if he clips John Jones.
Yeah, this is a compelling main event, and it is the thing that is getting me to the television screen. This is basically a one fight card, and it's all about Reyes and John Jones. I mean, this is a big money fight because every time John Jones fights, it's big money. I mean, look at the career. And it's crazy to think that John Jones is already 32 years old. It felt like he would be 27 or 26 forever. He always fought in a way where you thought of his youth because of his athleticism, his speed, and the unorthodox nature he went about developing his skills inside the MMA cage. And I mentioned the age because to me, it's probably the most important thing for John Jones. Because here's the deal, man. John Jones has been a champion in the UFC, essentially, since the beginning of this decade, since March 2011. From that point forward, every single fight he's been in has been a championship fight, and he hasn't lost one. That is one of the most impressive runs we will probably ever see in this sport. Really, when you really think about how hard it is in this sport, especially once we get past the Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz generation, when we just are seeing absolute killers who are well-rounded in every facet of the game, and it just seems like the game evolves like so fast. To maintain dominance in a weight class for essentially like 9 years is just an impressive and impeccable feat. So every time John Jones fights, it's appointment viewing television because we're always waiting for the other foot to drop. The other foot almost dropped when he took on Alexander Gustafsson the very first time. And we saw the perfect fighter almost look imperfect, get bloodied up, get beat up. And then the foot almost dropped against Thiago Santos. I mean, in the Thiago Santos fight, a fight where I thought John Jones was going to win convincingly at UFC 239, Thiago Santos nearly beat him. It was a split decision, and the man had a torn ACL. I think he had a torn MCL, a PCL, a meniscus. He tore ligaments I didn't even know existed, and he nearly beat John Jones. So to me, that really speaks to John Jones came into that fight, not the same John Jones that we've seen get past Daniel Cormier, destroy Shogun, who convincingly beat Alexander Gustafsson in that rematch. So that shows signs of the armor is starting to fade away. And for John, the focus is primarily on him. If he loses this fight, the storyline isn't going to be Dominic Reyes, the new pound-for-pound best guy in the world. It's going to be John Jones' loss of step. So that, to me, is the primary focus on this fight, how John Jones responds after the fight against Thiago Santos, and if we see a much better version of him, because there is no reason why he should not be able to dominate a fellow light heavyweight who has all those ligaments torn in his leg. And I'm picking John Jones, Jason, because if a guy's been consistent for 9.5 years, essentially, you got to bet on that. And that's why I'm taking John Jones here.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at how Dom Reyes has got to this position, obviously a very talented fighter, but, you know, when you think about, you know, his premier wins, I mean, you look at that Jared Cannonier win. Of course, we've seen what Jared's been able to do at 185 pounds. You know, he had that split decision against Volkan Ozdemir, which you can make a case that, you know, Volkan should have walked away. And of course, he's coming off that great win, you know, obviously. You know, the comments he made about, you know, Jones and athletes and the guy he's faced. And I'm sitting there and, you know, to me, for Dom Reyes is how is he going to be able to, you know, cut down that reach advantage, because he is going to have to close in. And that's where I think Jones could have a lot of success. And to me, I think Jones can take this fight wherever he wants to take it. If he wants to take it to the ground, I don't think he'll have a problem getting the fight to the ground. If he wants to keep this fight standing, yeah, I think you'll have a lot of success there. But, I mean, look, you know, Dom Reyes does have a puncher's chance. But, yeah, I'm just like you. I fully expect John Jones to go out there and get a victory. I know he's a little more than a 3-1 betting favorite in this fight. But, I mean, it's just it's I keep going back to this. It's like is what's outside of a punch rocking John Jones. Like, what's the path to victory for Dom Reyes?
Well, it could be a kick too, as he's shown with that, you know, a couple. He had a heck of a head kick knockout prior to his run in the UFC. And for Dom Reyes, I kind of talked a lot about John Jones in the first part, but to talk more about Dom Reyes, I mean, he's passed every single test he's got in the UFC since he made his debut. Practically all of his fights have been incredibly entertaining. To me, when you started to look at when Dom Reyes's rise was starting, it had to have been against Jared Cannonier when he had that impressive performance and took out Cannonier, dominated OSP, solid win over Ozdemir. And then it was the Chris Weidman victory that really put him over the top. So you look at his game and what he can do to beat John Jones. To me, it isn't going to be a fight where, I mean, there's two ways he can do it, in my opinion. One, he catches John Jones with a strike, which is certainly possible, although improbable because we haven't really seen John Jones put away ever by strikes. So that seems like a very difficult proposition, especially given the reach advantage. But it is going to be in space where I think Dom Reyes can pop in, land a big shot, and drop John Jones. That's where I think he can win. The other part has to be dictating the pace. And I don't think he's going to be able to do that. I think it's going to be a fight where John Jones dictates the pace. But if Dom Reyes takes this fight to John Jones, that may present the best opportunity to win a decision. Now, as far as how I think this fight's going to play out, I do think John Jones is going to utilize a lot of clinch battle, a lot of taking it inside and trying to bully Dom Reyes. And to me, the recipe for who wins a decision is 100% who controls the pace. Throughout his career, John Jones has made it a priority to do so, which is why I think he is going to win. But it is the power that Dom Reyes possesses and the fact that every single time he's gone in the UFC cage, he has come out with a victory that if you're a Dom Reyes fan, that could get you excited. But again, it's hard to bet against the consistency of John Jones, despite the fact that his very last performance was very inconsistent, one that we've seen out of him. And that's the thing you got to hold on to if you are predicting a John Jones upset. The thing you're holding on to is that the guy that walks into the cage on Saturday isn't the same guy who we've seen over the years dominate the UFC light heavyweight division.
Yeah, I mean, I expected John Jones win. I mean, I think really the only question is, does he get the win by stoppage and whether that happens? And I think for Dom Reyes is, if this fight does make it to the fourth or fifth round, what does he look like? You know, I think those are all questions. But, just looking at the betting odds, John Jones, well over now a 4-1 betting favorite in that fight. In the co-main event, Valentin Shevchenko is an 11-1 favorite in this fight. And, it's like you look at this and I mean, look, everyone's going to be picking, Valentina to win this fight. There's no question about that. But it's when you look at the other side of the fight and you're Caitlin, it's like, what is the path to victory? I thought I was on the Fight Metrics website, which is now UFCstats.com. And, I was looking at the tail of the tape and, has, Shevchenko 5'5" and Kaelin 5'9", but it's only a 2-inch reach disadvantage for Valentina Shevchenko. And obviously, I think that, when you look at her title defense against Liz Carmouche, I think she kind of won her races that, that wasn't exactly an exciting fight to watch. But this is one of those ones that I sit there and say the path to victory is just, I guess, a decision loss for Shevchenko if we're talking about the path to victory for Caitlin.
Yeah, I think so. It would be really hard to imagine a path to victory, but a decision loss would be it. That's the only time we've seen Shevchenko losing the UFC was 2-decision to Amanda Nunes. But in terms of how that decision would come to play, I think it's pretty simple, man. For Caitlin Chookagian, her path to victory has to be a volume of strikes in this fight. Shevchenko is going to look to counterpunch and counterstrike Chookagian. Shevchenko, the southpaw, is going to look to counterstrike that orthodox style. In all likelihood, that's what's going to happen. Even though Chookagian has never been finished in her UFC career, all of her fights have gone the distance. I do think Shevchenko's going to finish Chookagian with her counterstrikes. I do think that's going to happen. But when you look at how Caitlin has put together victories, it has been through volume. The punches themselves haven't necessarily been significant. And that's going to have to be what it's going to be. It's going to have to be an old school Leonard Garcia strategy where you just throw and throw and throw and hope you don't get dropped. But for Chookagian against Shevchenko, I think this is a tough, tough fight for Chookagian. The odds are wide in Valentina's favor, as you mentioned. And needless to say, if Caitlin Chookagian ends the night as the champion, I mean, that's the upset of the year and an early prediction for upset of the decade, because Shevchenko is starting to put together a resume that is making her considered as potentially, the second best female fighter of all time. I don't know if she's there yet. She probably isn't, actually, when you start to look at her resume and pick it apart and contrast it with Cyborg and others. But Shevchenko fights like the type of fighter who's going to win every single fight in her UFC career unless her opponent is named Amanda Nunes, and that's going to put her in the history books.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you said there. I completely expect a Shevchenko win. Some other fights that necessarily haven't really touched on too much. Austin Lingo versus Yusuf Zalal is a fight that came together Last week, actually, I had a chance to talk to Eustace as well late last week. The interview's up on theamereport.com and the AmeriPort YouTube channel. I've had a chance to talk to Zalal multiple occasions over the past couple years. When this fight got booked, I was a little surprised to see Zalal got this opportunity at this point. The fact of, yes, he is coming off that knockout in LFA, but prior to that, he had lost back-to-back fights. Not surprising at all that when the UFC was looking to add a fight to this card, that, you know, short notice, that Austin Lingo was someone that they were turning to. I mean, anyone who follows the regional scene knows that Austin is a fighter that a lot of people are very high on. As much as I like Yusuf Zalal, you know, you just got to be honest. I think that this is Austin Lingo's fight to lose. I think he is the more talented fighter in this one. He's actually, I mean, to me, as you know, when you're thinking about who are the fighters on this card that we, you know, want to look at, long term, of who could potentially, you know, a year, 2 years from now, we're talking about, you know, potentially, you know, top 15 type fighters. Austin Lingo is a guy to pay attention to. I know it's not listed on the UFC website. I believe it's somewhere on the prelims. I'm not sure if it's going to be the first fight of the night, or if it's actually going to be on the TV prelims. But Austin Lingo is a guy you want to pay attention to.
Yeah, man, that's a great call. And he's going to force you to pay attention to him, because the resume he's put together prior to getting the call to the UFC is downright impressive. This is a featherweight who spent the majority of his career in LFA. And you start in LFA and you get some solid fights where you develop, and you get put in a main event situation against a tough guy. And he took on Chris Hadley and he knocked him out in 25 seconds. Austin Lingo, to me, it's pretty simple. The bread and butter for what I've seen out of him is his stand-up. It's a finishability stand-up really quickly. He has 5 first-round victories. Yusuf Zalal would be this is the fight that would absolutely main event an LFA card, for instance, and that, to me, is kind of what these prelims look like. So Austin Lingo is the guy you circle and you box and you check mark and you want to watch him fight. Zalal's going to provide a fight, but for Lingo, the goal has to be a first-round finish to, hey, man, he's making some solid money. But if he can go out there, win a UFC fight, and with the finish, get a performance of the night bonus, that $50,000 check is some life-changing money. So it's a great opportunity for Lingo. But overall, man, again, you look at this card, and all I got to tell you is this, man. Joe Silva's legacy just gets better and better with every UFC card I see, man. I mean, these cards are rough. They are rough, and Joe Silva did one hell of a job. And he probably got out when it was the right time, because he got out before they started running 57 cards a year. But all I can say is Joe Silva consistently put together full cards that got me invested and interested. And that's not the case with this card. That was not the case with Connor's pay-per-view. And it's kind of a shame, but there's still plenty of things you can look for. But you have to be a hardcore fan to get into it. And that's just not gonna draw eyeballs to watch your ESPN TV prelims.
No, I totally agree with you. You know, I think that it's a decent card. I wouldn't say I'm super excited, but I think it's a nice card. For someone like myself who pay attention to the regional scene, that particularly, you know, some of these fighters that, you know, I've got to know over the past couple of years, you know, watched over the past couple of years. So, you know, for someone like myself, I think it's a little more interesting. But if you're like, you're just a casual fan, just wants to watch John Jones fight, yeah, I don't think there's anything that's ultimately going to stick out to you about this one. Looking at the betting odds, Daniel, and looking at my picks, I have 3 underdogs I'm picking to win.
Who are the underdogs you have?
First off, I'm going with Dan Ige, who's a very slight underdog at plus 115. My second underdog, I'm going to go with Mario Bautista at plus 120 over Miles John. And my third one is Jonathan Martinez at plus 100 against Andre Uhl.
Okay, I like that.
I think there's great people who might look at the Miles John one and say, Jay, hey, what are you thinking? I just think that that Mario Bautista has a overall better package than Miles John. I think the question is, if Miles takes it to the ground, I believe Mario's going to be able to get back to his feet. And that's why I picked Mario in that one.
I like that. I like that. If I'm going with some underdog picks, I'll give you three. My first one would be Kalen Williams against Alex Moreno. He's got odds at +250, and Moreno has been okay in the UFC, but nothing to write home about. And when you have a guy coming off who's done real well in the Michigan scene, and I'm going to go with Kalen Williams to take him out. I'm going to go with Justin Toffa at 205, just because Juan Adams, despite having a victory in his first UFC fight, is not someone I look at and think, man, this guy deserves to be a 245 favorite.
Yeah.
So whenever I see opportunities like that, even if I don't necessarily think the guy's going to win, I'm going to go the other way, especially in a heavyweight fight where it's just going to come down to who lands a strike against the other one. And then, oh gosh, it's a tough one. Yeah, I guess I'll go Jorny Newsom at +110. I think he'll be able to get past the length and the hardcore reach advantage Domingo Poilarte is going to have. And I think what you'll see is potentially Newsom have success in rounds 2 and 3 to win a decision against a guy in Poilarte who's got a big frame. And that's tough to carry when you're a 135 pounder. I think he's 6 foot tall. So I'll go with Jorny Newsom as my other upset pick. But otherwise, I'm looking at a chalk predictions.
Yeah, you mentioned about Poilarte. He's got a 6-inch reach advantage in that fight. Yeah, I am not with you on the Kalen Chaos Williams call there. He is coming off a win against Jeremy Holloway, who at one time we saw in Bellator. But overall, I mean, a lot of his wins seem to be 500 type fighters, a little over 500 type fighters. He steps up on short notice. This was supposed to be Diego Lima's spot, but of course Diego injured. So and Alex Moreno, I mean, look, obviously I think he wants to keep the fight on the feet. That could be a fun fight. Andrea Lee, I think is another, someone obviously to pay attention to there at 125 pounds. But yeah, I'm with you. I expect a lot of favorites. Yeah, the Juan Adams Justin Toffa fight. I'm picking Juan Adams. And when me and Pete Rogers do our DFS show here, we're actually doing it tomorrow morning on Thursday morning. So that should be up around Thursday afternoon on YouTube and the MMAReport.com. That's going to be one of those fights that from a DraftKings perspective, you're going to have one of those guys if you want to win that big GPP. I think for this week, I think $100,000 goes to first place. But that's one of those fights that, like, if I sat there and said, there's no betting odds, just pick the winner. Like, I don't know if my confidence level on a scale of 1 to 10 is like higher than a 5.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which tells you that the odds are probably, you don't want to put money on Juan Adams, even if you're picking him, if your confidence level isn't that high.
Well, it's just because of, what we've seen out of Juan Adams in the UFC. I think there's just, if you sit there and say that Juan is going to go out there and immediately engage in the wrestling. All right, cool. All right. I really like that. Now I know, obviously Juan has made some changes in his training. But that's just one of those fights that, Justin Toffa, I mean, probably if he loses and if he gets finished, his days in the UFC might be over, unless maybe I know Dana White mentioned last week that the plan is to do an immediate rematch of Volkanovski and Holloway, and obviously that would make a lot of sense to do that fight in Australia. So maybe Toffa gets one there, but yeah, that's just one of those fights that I wouldn't say I'm extremely comfortable in picking. I mean, there weren't a lot of fights I would say that I really struggled with a pick. I mean, Adams Toffa was one. Ul Martinez, Poilarte Newsom, and Batista Johns. I don't know if I'm going to be the majority of this one, but if you talk about the fights outside of the title fights, I think Bektik Ige would probably be a majority of people's number one fight. I don't know how many people would say number two, Johns and Batista, but that's my number two.
Yeah, I certainly see what you have there, because Johns, Batista, these two guys to me are very mirror images of each other in terms of their career trajectory and where they're at. I mean, these are both guys where Batista is someone, I think Miles John is the pick here for most people, but Batista to me is just game for Johns, game for game. So I get you there. I'm still going for my number two fight. I'm still going Lewis Latifi, just because Lewis, again, I just want to see that dude fight. That's as simple as that. I want to see that dude eat. I love the dude's Instagram.
And I love watching the guy compete. And you mentioned going up from light heavyweight to heavyweight for Ilir Latifi. Gosh, that's a tough first assignment because Derek Lewis, man, when he punches, people look around because they think it's a dang earthquake. And, you do not want to get on your back or even on your feet and be on the receiving end of a Derek Lewis strike. Just talk to Alexander Volkov how well that went late in his fight that he dominated. So that's my number two. And for my number three fight, it would be Lauren Murphy, Andrea Lee. Andrea Lee is my pick, but when you do look at the betting odds, I do think her odds are a bit inflated. She is at minus 345, according to Five Dimes, which to me, yes, her run prior to her loss was really good, especially the victory over Montana De La Rosa, a really talented striker. But Lauren Murphy is a very game competitor, and I feel as though the skill levels aren't necessarily represented in the betting odds here. Even though Andrea Lee is still my pick, I think she's too heavy of a favorite.
I expect her to win there. But yeah, she is a relatively big favorite of that fight. Of course, that all goes down on Saturday night. I'm looking forward to sitting on the couch or maybe going out to a bar to watch these fights coming up on Saturday night. But before we get into some other things that we want to talk about here on this week's edition of the podcast, I want to let you know that this week's podcast is powered by Roman. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm not feeling it. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it with a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet.
With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. And getting started is simple. You just got to go to GetRoman.com/MAReport. That's GetRoman.com/MAReport and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it.
Just go to GetRoman.com/MAReport to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MAReport for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/MAReport and really appreciate their support of this podcast. They've been with us for well over a year and a half now, which shows, and obviously by you going to that direct URL, it shows, let's know that you heard about them here on the MAReport. Then once again, that is GetRoman.com/MAReport. Now, Daniel, before we get into Rafael Lovato Jr.'s appearance on the Joe Rogan podcast, I do want to mention a question that I got from @DirtyBird212 on Twitter. He says, success of a Bellator Super Bowl show in Tampa, what arena would they use? And would you be in attendance? Now, in terms of an arena they would use, I would expect that Amelie would be filled up with probably something that's already been booked. Amelie Arena, which is the home of the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is a 20,000 plus seat arena. And, obviously, even if that arena wasn't currently booked, they would have to book the entire venue. You know, Amway's not going to sit there and book an event where maybe you're only going to use the first level. Cause I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Bellator, but I don't know if they could put 20,000 people in a seats in Tampa, Florida, just being honest. I think the probably realistic venue they would go to if it's available would be the Yuengling Center, which is on the campus of the University of South Florida. Bellator has done events there in the past under Bjorn Rebney. The UFC went there a couple of, a long time ago. I want to say one of Cain Velasquez's early fights was at the Yuengling Center at that time, known as USF's Sundome. In terms of if I would go, it really would based on if I have any NFL or Tampa Bay Buccaneer obligations on that Friday or Saturday. That would depend on that. But if I had nothing going on, yeah, of course I would go there. But I know, this was something that there was a tweet kind of going between a couple of us about this. And Christian Prenup, who used to work for Bellator and now runs a casino up in upstate New York, he said, good luck finding a fighter hotel within, you know, 100 miles. And that is very true. I think that if Bellator were considering doing, I've heard in the past that they have looked at coming back to Tampa. But I think that probably with the amount of it would cost them to run a show in Tampa, I would guess that's probably not the time frame they would go with.
Well, the good thing is there's a lot of people in town, and that's where you're going to capitalize. And you're going to have a lot of media people who are like, man, I don't have anything to do on Saturday night. Let me go to the fights. They go to the fights and they'll talk about it. So there's an advantage there. You can capitalize on that, whether it be on a Saturday or a Friday night. But there's another weekend that Bellator could attack. And that weekend is WrestleMania weekend. I don't know. There's a lot of shows. There's a hardcore oversaturation of shows. But there's a possibility for an MMA company to go in there and run a fight night the weekend of WrestleMania, especially if it features fighters who used to be professional wrestlers. And I think that would do good business because there's a lot of people that fly in for these WrestleMania weekends. There's a plethora of shows. And if you put on a Bellator card with Jack Swagger, Jake Hager on there, and some other guys who have some type of wrestling experience, I think potentially you could get people who are tired of going to all the pro wrestling shows in the weekend, they'll be interested in an MMA show. So that's another potential big-time weekend that an MMA company could attack. But I doubt either will happen.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising. I know a couple of weeks ago I saw, one of the wrestling websites came up my Twitter timeline about, just like all the events that were happening in Tampa during WrestleMania weekend. And, it is kind of surprising that maybe, even a smaller MMA promotion doesn't try to attack that. But of course, also part of that is all these venues that, you could host your event at, they understand what's going on that weekend. I think one of the things that, kind of surprising about the WrestleMania weekend, what I've seen so far, is pretty much everything's really happening in Tampa. Tampa, it's a Tampa Bay area, Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater. But it seems like everything's happening inside Tampa. Yeah, I mean, you're spot on. It is kind of surprising that these shows. I know there's a local MMA show happening here next Saturday night, the day after Valentine's Day. I actually talked to one of the fighters that's going to be on the card yesterday. Look for that on the MMAreport.com, Travis Foster. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. You'll see more, and maybe that's just because, and it's just, look, this town's going crazy. That week of WrestleMania, and I think I'm going, Daniel. I think I'm going to go to WrestleMania.
Oh my God, that's the worst choice you've ever made. Oh my God, you poor soul. I hope you enjoy it, but I feel bad for you because that thing is like 8 hours, man. That's like an 8 hour show. But
I think I'll be in a suite though.
Oh, you'll be in a suite. Okay. Look, man, you'll enjoy it, but this is what you got to do. You got to take an Uber and you got to enjoy a lot of $10 daddy sodas and just have a good time. But I tell you what, man, WrestleMania is a big event, but it has gotten so big that I would almost not want to go to something like that because it's like 8 hours. But yeah, you should go and enjoy it. And I think you got to drink a lot of daddy sodas.
Yeah, I've had a buddy who's gone to it, and he's like, yeah, man, it's long. I mean, it's a long event. I remember I went up to a buddy's house last year to watch it, and I was like, good Lord, this is longer than a UFC event.
Oh, it is. It's like 8 hours,
Yeah, I think you definitely got to Uber. You definitely got to do that. Yeah. Definitely got to do that. But, Dale, last week, one of the biggest news items come out last week was Bellator middleweight champion Rafael Lovato Jr. going on the Joe Rogan podcast and ultimately reveals that he has a brain disease and that, while he's not saying the word retirement, I think the term he used is that his career is indefinitely in hold. And, he outlined a lot of things. I think part of I don't know how many fighters would put their story out there the way he did. But look, if you're going to go on any platform, Joe Rogan's podcast is clearly the platform to go on. I mean, he even put out the scans of his brain that he put out there. One of the things that, he talked about, how there's certain places that you have to get a brain scan. He mentioned three of them: California, Europe and New York. Now, there is many more states that do require a brain scan, but you know, one of the things that I did go back and look at, so there's been four states that Rafael Vato Jr. has fought in prior to having to get this brain scan: Oklahoma, Idaho, Illinois, and Texas. I think all those commissions now maybe need to reevaluate some things. And my guess is on this, Daniel, is that in terms of his MMA career, Rafael Vato Jr.'s MMA career is likely over, because I don't know if there is a path for a commission to say, we're going to give you a license. B, for Bellator to sit there and say, okay, we want to go ahead with this. If you're a referee, would you want to work a Rafael Jr. Fight? I mean, there's so many aspects of this, because I mean, look, there's a lot of unknowns, and I just don't think that there's going to be a commission and probably even Bellator that is even, I think that their mindset is, you know, we're not going to give you a license.
It's funny. Like I listened to the podcast and it was great, man. I've been listening to a lot of the Joe Rogan MMA podcast, and they're great stuff. You know, my big takeaway from this podcast is that I'm really glad that Rafael Carvalho was able to fight Gegard Mousasi, because if this is it for him, and I know he still wants to fight, obviously, but if this is it for him, I'm glad he took that fight, because he was able to achieve a high degree of success. Mm-hmm. He was able to become a champion in the sport. And so I'm glad he was able to do that, because when you listen to it, you listen to how much work he's put into it. Especially the rehabilitation of like his hamstring, I think, is what he had issue with. So I do feel good for him that he was able to achieve that. But given, and this is all paraphrasing from memory, I didn't write anything down, but the way he described it, he has these spots on his brain, and this mm-hmm. is like they're bleeding a little bit. And so the brain is a very touchy subject, especially bleeding with the brain. And it's a situation where, because he's gone so public with it and we have so much information prior to it, if something ever does happen inside the cage, even though he said he has never experienced any symptoms, but if something ever does happen inside the cage, we have all of this information prior that whoever was responsible for him fighting is going to get thrown under the bus. Or maybe thrown under the bus isn't the correct terminology, but they're going to get roasted for doing it, and they probably won't have their job anymore. So That's a tough spot for Rafael Carvalho, because brain stuff is incredibly, incredibly delicate in a sport where so much trauma is done to the brain. You feel bad for him, because, again, he had no idea about this situation until he had the scan. It wasn't affecting his life, and they don't recommend surgery because they don't recommend until he shows symptoms. You know, there are probably several fighters who have gone their career with this situation, and they just never know that they have this situation. Fighters who fought before scans were a thing. And I feel bad for Carvalho. I think he will fight again. But he's definitely going to have to commission shop.
And, I don't think he ever fights again. I don't think there will be a commission that will license him.
You don't think so?
You now have two commissions that we now know of that are saying we're not giving you a license at this point. You know,
but what if there's a doctor who clears him, a respected doctor? Okay, there already was one.
Let me look at you like this. You're Scott Coker, you're Steven Espinoza. This is all now public information. He's put it out there. Do you feel comfortable putting on a fight with Rafael Vato Jr.?
Whew. That's a great question. I don't know, man. I honestly don't.
Yeah, that's my thing to me is like, is there a path to him getting a license? You know, and one of the things that, you know, I'm kind of sitting there by him, you know, putting this information out there. Now, this is where, you know, reporters can reach out to Andy Foster and now question Andy Foster about, because he put it out there. I do wonder if by him coming out there that maybe there will be another fighter that says, you know what, maybe I should get a brain scan. You know, Joe Rogan mentioned that podcast that that's actually something he is considered, but he made it. So he goes, I'm scared to get it done. egos, because, you know, they're, I think we all have that. We, you know, if we ever have to go to a doctor, I think we're all kind of nervous, or is something bad going to come up in this, or something we don't want to hear. I mean, it's just, it's one of those things that I just, I you know, and of course, I mean, we're not doctors. We have no idea. But when you start having, you know, doctors saying no, yes. And remember, now, one of the things about, so Safe MMA, who does the medical side for the Bellator Europe events. Now, remember, Mike Mazzulli still oversees that. So he works with Safe MMA. It should be noted that the neurosurgeon that Mike Mazzulli works with is Dr. Alessi, who's a neurosurgeon for the NFL. So I think that, you know, the problem is if they start commission shopping, those commissions are going to call up Andy Foster. They're going to call up Mike Mazzulli, and they're going to say, all right, give us all the information you have. And that's where I think that it's a very small path, small percentage of a path for Rafael Vato Jr. to get a license. And I know some people don't necessarily like this fight. I think I would be shocked if it's not Gegard Mousasi versus Douglas Lima for the vacant middleweight title.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what's what's up next.
I mean, and like, I think, look, you feel like, I mean, you sit there and you listen to that podcast, Daniel, and like, You feel so, you know, bad for Rafael, because it's so much that he doesn't know. And the fact of it, now that his parents are going to have to get their brain scanned to see if they have this, like, I can't imagine what it is just in the daily thoughts of Rafael as he is just trying to gather information.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's definitely gone through the worst of it, though. I think the lead up to the Mousasi fight was just the most unsure he was, because when you first learn the diagnosis, you are most unsure. So it does seem like he has a little more information, but I feel so bad for him because he loves competing so much. Mm-hmm. And to take it away from him when he isn't experiencing symptoms is a very difficult thing to do. But I understand why a promoter wouldn't want to put him on the show, because of the concern, the blowback if something bad does happen. And something bad happens to people who don't have those types of illnesses, just because at the end of the day, it's still trauma to the brain, and trauma to the brain is significant. So yeah, man, when I listen to these Joe Rogan podcasts, I mean, my big takeaway, you know, with the injuries of Usman, Edgar, even Carvalho, is so much of this fight, once you get really good, is about rehabilitating the injuries that you have. I mean, these guys struggle, man, with the types of injuries they have and their fight camps and deal with. It's crazy to me that they are able to compete at a world-class level, given that for some of them, it's hard to even walk.
I thought the Usman podcast was tremendous.
Yeah. Yeah. He talks about how he goes downstairs backwards, I think.
Yeah. Like,
that's crazy.
Yeah. To sit there and hear him. And I had really never, you know, cause I think what happens on Joe's podcast is I just think that, you know, a lot of fighters who walk in there, their guard is down. And they really open up, and it's not an interview. It's a conversation. And I felt I learned much. I feel like I knew nothing about Kamaru Usman heading into that interview. And then just kind of hear, you know, just every aspect of his life, and, you know, talking about his daughter, and, you know, talking about kind of his goals, and even saying that, you know, he wouldn't mind being a marriage counselor at some point in his life. I mean, there's so many things that came out of that. The Frankie Edgar one was a really good one as well. I listened to that the other day. You know, those are, I love listening to those podcasts, because I feel like we get inside the fighter's mind, and it really, I think it even helps me when I'm interviewing fighters, because I think it offers me kind of a different route of maybe what to bring up in an interview.
Exactly. They're awesome. They're long form, so you really get a sense of people. And it's a great way to understand the fighters and get a better sense of who they are, because they do have their guard down. But unfortunately for Rafael Carvalho, he showed the downside of having your guard down. With the Joe Rogan interview, because again, that lone podcast definitely lessened the chances of him competing again.
Yeah, but maybe it's one of those things that maybe this helps change some things. Maybe we see some more commissions go with brain scans, and maybe it does save some fighter. I mean, and you know, I'm sure Rafael Vato Jr. will continue to be a part of the Bellator family no matter what happens. You know, especially, I mean, when you talk about, you know, his credentials in jiu-jitsu. So, you know, obviously our thoughts are out to Rafa Lovato Jr., but, you know, I think that all signs, you know, it would seem likely that Lima versus Musasi is a fight that makes sense. And I know I mentioned that on Twitter, and there were some, you know, fans that were not all in on that one. You know, one of the response was paraphrased, was basically like, hey, I'm tired of the champ thing, which I totally get. But the fact is, I've been around Douglas Lima. Douglas Lima is a massive welterweight. I would almost bet if you put Musasi and Lima on the scale now, Lima might weigh more.
That's crazy to me, but I mean, that's insane.
I want to say Lima. I know Lima a while ago kind of changed up his diet, but I still think he walks around like 200 pounds.
Wow. And that's a guy in Musasi who used to fight at 205. Granted, he probably walked into the weight scale without any time in the sauna to make the weight, but that's saying something. I mean, a dynamite fight.
I mean, obviously, if you're Lorenz Larkin, it's something you don't want to hear. Or maybe if you're Michael Page, it's something you don't want to hear. But I think that, you know, Scott Coker is looking to make big fights. And he's looking to make fights that are going to get people to turn on the Bellator product, whether we're talking about Paramount or DAZN. Or, I mean, look, I fully expect they'll be on Showtime and maybe in CBS sometime in the near future. But to me, if you're Coker, that's the fight to make. I mean, you know, you can make Musasi versus Salter for the vacant title, but is that going to ultimately get people to the television set or to their tablet, their phone, their computer, whatever it may be? I think the answer is no.
Yeah, it's not. When you think of something you could headline a show with, in terms of crowning a new champion, Lima Musasi is the number one choice, and there's a big, big gap between that and whatever else they could put on to crown a new champion.
You remember after Musasi lost that fight, he started talking about how he knows Lovato Jr. was on steroids and all that. I wonder how he feels right now about those comments.
Yeah, man. It's a rough look for a guy who, for the most part, when you think of Musasi, you think of respect and stuff like that, a quiet guy. And to say stuff like that hurts your legacy and hurts your reputation because you come across like a sore loser accusing somebody of doing something that you have no evidence of.
Yeah, I know. It makes you wonder kind of what he thinks now. But of course, you know, Bellator does stream on DAZN. And, you know, and I see this tweet from DAZN the other day. It's of a Logan Paul, Antonio Brown stare down, and I'm like, is the zone basically just saying screw it, we know to raise subscriptions that we just gotta be celebrity boxing?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they gotta make some money, unfortunately that appears to be the avenue they are going with. For the zone, the business model is simple. We need people to give us money for a subscription, and the celebrity YouTube boxing circuit is something that generates people grabbing their parents' debit cards and purchasing pay-per-views and purchasing subscriptions. So I understand it. All I got to say is if I'm DAZN, I want nothing to do with the Antonio Brown business. Nothing to do with that. That is a very dark business because he is someone who I look at what's happened over this past year, the past 12 months, and he is someone who does not need to be in the spotlight. He needs therapy or something, because he to me is just a loose cannon. We've seen the cops at his house a couple times now, and I do not want to get in the Antonio Brown business if I'm DAZN.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Antonio Brown is obviously he's got the legal situation. You know, in terms of Logan Paul, you know, he seems to be interested in a Bellator fight. It seems Scott Coker's interested. I would say this: if they were close in weight, which I'm pretty sure they're not at all. If Bellator was going to do a fight with Logan Paul, you know who you should do it against, right?
The
Aaron Chalmers,
the guy from England.
Yeah, Chalmers. But they're, yeah. I mean, Chalmers is now fighting 155, and I want to say Logan has competed like plus 180 pounds, somewhere 190 pounds, somewhere in there. So they're nowhere near the same weight. But if you were going to do a fight with Logan in MMA, a fight like Aaron Chalmers would make the most sense.
Yeah. But honestly, the fight that would make the most sense would be like,
Logan Paul versus some other YouTuber he's feuding with. You want to capitalize on that YouTube feud money. And like that,
like, that's my thing. Like, obviously, these type of fights draw a lot of interest. And Daniel, I'll admit this. You know, Logan's brother was boxing last Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
I turned on DAZN.
Wow.
Now it was a Thursday night, and I was already tired, so I didn't make it till his fight. I saw the first fight. I watched like two or three of the prelims because I had nothing else going on. And, you know, next morning I did see the highlights, and I was like, yeah, it looked like one guy who actually really prepared for a fight and the other guy just showed up. And mm-hmm. Logan's brother won. And but yeah, I'll sit there and admit if I would not have been dead ass tired, I was going to watch it.
That's the saddest thing you've ever admitted to me, Jason. There are so many things
worse
to do.
There's going to be something worse I've admitted.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe you tuned into that celebrity boxing live. You didn't even watch the main event. You watched the damn undercard. Although I heard the undercard had some reputable boxers. So,
look, yeah. If you were a big-time boxer or even a big-time MMA fighter, if you said, hey, we won't put you as an undercard for two YouTubers who we think can bring a million people, all right, cool, let's go.
Hey man, if the cash is check, let's go for it. And it's not only the cash, but it's also, like you mentioned, the viewership. You're gonna have a crap load of people watching you. Maybe you could turn into a star.
But you know, fighting is like the only sport where this can happen. Some YouTuber's not gonna all of a sudden go play in the NBA tomorrow.
Yeah,
you know, not magically gonna play in the NFL or the NHL or MLB. Like, fighting is the only sport that this is actually like legitimately possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's simple, man. It's a sport where we're not putting them up against the best. We can put them up against similar competition because it's show business. It's you know, it's answering questions, and it doesn't always have to be the best versus the best. It could be, I want to see this dude fight this dude, and let's go for it. And that's interesting little property, and you know, I know Barstool Sports has had a lot of success with their Rough and Rowdy deal, which I'm not really sure what that is.
It's amateur boxing. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It was funny is the other day, like I saw, like you could literally go on their website and you could submit an application to be on those shows.
I believe it, man. Because when I look at the highlight videos, the level of quality isn't there. Yeah,
like back in the day, there was a bar locally that basically did that, just, you know, amateur fights, and you know, people would come out. I mean, look, it's you know, for the most part, a lot of people love watching fights, and but it's kind of crazy, like, you know, Bellator could put on the highest level of MMA fight, they're not going to bring the new subscriptions in like a Logan Paul can bring in. And it's just a fact.
Mm. Yep. And it's simple, man. It's all about getting people to care about you compete. And, you know, these people come in with the advantage of they already have a bunch of loyal followers and people who pay attention to them. That's what their business has been. Their business, they're in the business of attention, where they grab attention and they funnel that into another way to get more revenue. And, if you're a guy who your only passion is fighting and martial arts, you're not going to get that attention because you haven't invested that much time in getting people to care about you.
And look, and we talked about, you know, look, there's, when it comes to uber star levels in MMA, you know, it's Conor McGregor and no one else. There's no one even close. And yesterday on the Disney earnings fourth quarter call, their chief executive mentions that UFC 246 brought in 500,000 new subscribers at ESPN Plus, and the pay-per-view had 1 million pay-per-view buys, which it is believed to be the first streaming pay-per-view to bring in 1 million buys. And it just says a lot about Conor McGregor. I mean, look, whether you love, hate, or indifferent to him, this guy brings an audience, and there is no other fighter the UFC has currently that can bring in that type of new subscribers for ESPN Plus.
I mean, like, I think about it this way. I just Googled the ESPN Plus total subscribers, and according to November 2019, there was 3.5 million or so subscribers. Well,
they're at 7.7 million now.
They're at 7.7 million now.
Yeah, so they were at the end of December, they were at 6.6.
Wow. Wow, so that number's way off.
But think about this. Think about this. They're saying, so just based on, because, you know, look, if you want to buy a UFC pay-per-view, you have to be an ESPN Plus subscriber. So they added 500,000 new subscribers just because of that pay-per-view. That says a lot about Conor McGregor's drawing power. And, I mean, look, if Conor McGregor can all of a sudden, you know, maybe get another win, and now you're setting up a rematch with Khabib, you know, towards the end of 2020. Woo, that is big money, Daniel.
Yeah, that is big money. And for ESPN, it's a sigh of relief because they put a bunch of money in that UFC deal. And they, to me, they were not getting the better end of it until Conor fought. And that is why they invested in the UFC, to get a guy to essentially add like 10% of their subscriber rate with just one night. And he will continue to do that if he continues to win, which he probably will. And even if he continues to lose, he'll probably still do that same thing.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what his next fight is. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of options. Dana last week mentioning that he wants to do Kamaru Usman versus Jorge Masvidal. So, you know, that looks like that's going to be off the table for Conor. Obviously, there's the Gaethje fight potentially out there, the trilogy against Nate Diaz. I mean, maybe he's a backup plan if something happens where, you know, those two guys Friday, April 18th, because I don't want to mention their names because I don't want to jinx it. Because I really want to see that fight. Hopefully that fight happens. By the way, got to end this. Colby Covington, man, he's sticking to the gimmick, man.
Yeah, man. He's a crappy wrestler. I tell you that much, but a crappy pro wrestler will still sell some tickets. But yeah, you mentioned it. He was on the Ariel Helwani show, right? Saying all kinds of nonsense.
Yeah, he went on Ariel and also he did an interview with James Lynch, and look, clearly, obviously, there's frustration levels with how that fight ended. But it's like, dude, if you last one more minute, did you not look at the scorecards? You were going to lose. Like, and I'm sitting there going, like, I understand he's got this gimmick and, I understand your frustrations with Mark Goddard and did Mark Goddard stop that a little quick? Maybe. But if he lets that fight go on for 5-10 seconds more, is it going or 20 or 30 or 40 seconds longer? Does it change the result? No. Kamaru Usman. Look, it was a great fight. And there's these times where I look at Colby Covington and I understand, you know, this is who he is and this is how he's promoting himself. But sometimes I'm sitting like, dude, you are one of the top welterweights in the world. There is no question about it. Man, at some point, just let your fighting do the talking for you. I understand he did all this to get the position he's in. And I don't think sitting and waiting for Kamaru Usman or immediate rematch, I don't know if that's necessarily the smart play in this one, because UFC could, you know, just say, okay, cool, we'll offer you one fight every 3 months because that's what we have to do, you know, per your contract. But I mean, it's just like I'm sitting there and I'm listening to the interview and I'm like, man, like, is there no one around you that sat there and showed you what the scorecards were?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude thought he was up four rounds to nothing.
He's nuts. He's a crazy man.
Dude, he, and of course he says he didn't have a broken jaw, but been 7 weeks since we've heard from you.
Yeah, yeah.
Timing's interesting.
Why didn't he do it? Yeah.
Timing's interesting. That's all I'll say.
How long does it take to recover from a broken jaw, Jason?
6 weeks.
Oh, oh my God.
I would love to be a fly on the wall when he walks into American Top Team for the first time. Cause you know, he mentioned he hasn't been back yet. He's looking to get back in and Masvidal is in the gym. Oh man. Would love to be a fly on the wall when that happens.
Me too, man. Me too. That to me is they got to get some cameras there. If that's going
to
happen.
If you're AGT, you should just film that and like sell it to like TMZ.
I know. Sell it to TMZ, sell it to the UFC. I mean, TMZ will be the one to spend the money, but
Exactly. But that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, be sure to check out our presenting sponsor, Roman. Go to GetRoman.com/MMA Report to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MMA Report. That unique URL is also available in the show notes. Of course, you can listen to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, RadioInfluence.com, plenty of places that you can check out this podcast at. Of course, also be sure to subscribe to the MMA Report on YouTube. That's where you can get a lot of putting clips of the podcast up there. Also, you know, my various interviews I have as a got a bunch of interviews that we're going to be putting up this week, you know, for fighters we're fighting this week, next week. You'll got Casey Kenny, who's fighting on the UFC card next week. I talked to him earlier this week. So look out for that interview, plus a bunch of other interviews. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Valor Hour with Tim Loy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Joining us now ahead of his main event at next week's Valor 69, February 8th at the world famous Cotton Eye Joe. He'll be defending his lightweight championship for VFC, taking on the Bosnian barn cat Demir Farhatbegovic. On the line now, it's the champ, David Ruthless Robbins.
You know, I feel like I have to respect him everywhere. When I've watched him before, you know, he's really accurate with the striking. He could be dangerous, you know, with hands, feet, knees, elbows. I've seen him throw it all. And he's just as quick to jump on submissions. You know, I've watched all of his fights now several times through. You know, he'll dive for leg locks. He'll throw up arm locks and triangles and stuff. He's, you know, pretty dangerous from every position. And I think this is an awesome matchup, you know. We've been kind of at different paths or different points of our career throughout the last couple of years. And I don't think there would have been a better time for us to be able to make this matchup happen.
Valor Hour with Valor Fighting Challenge matchmaker Tim Loy can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.